Nice work, real good drive work, and we meet at the house.
Sorry, we're good.
Okay.
Everybody check your mics real quick, I checked them before, then I turned them off.
Is Cocoon House down there?
Normally.
Dave, is Cocoon House down there, you know?
Oh, okay.
I think Cocoon House is on the next block. It's at Plainview Place.
On the next one, what was going on?
Okay, we're ready to hold the meeting for May 13th, the planning commission.
Keep that.
In order. Dave, could you please take the roll call?
Yes. Chairman Christensen.
Here.
Commissioner Demarest.
Here.
Commissioner Dirksen.
Here.
Commissioner Rodland.
Here.
Commissioner Sherwood.
Here.
Commissioner Tuttle.
Here.
Thank you. Okay, this is a time set aside for comments from citizens. Any members of the audience would like to speak, you can go ahead and raise your hand and come up and give your name. Anybody? Okay, I don't see any hands, so we'll move on to approval of minutes. I didn't see any minutes.
Actually, we have no minutes tonight that they did not get done. We'll be bringing April 22nd and tonight's minutes to next week's meeting.
Okay, all right. Okay, great, thank you. And I see I have a bunch here to sign before I leave. Thank you. Okay, and now the public hearing.
Oh, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I may?
Yes.
I'd like to introduce Melissa Sartorius. She joined us, what, three weeks ago, as our new staff planner.
Oh.
And I'd like her to introduce herself a little bit, but she's probably too modest to tell you that. Friday, this past Friday, she took this national exam for the American Institute of Certified Planners, and she passed.
Congratulations.
Do you get a raise then?
I don't think that was part of the agreement, but
I raised my voice. She's a real asset to the city. It's
glad to have you aboard.
Thank you. Just a little bit of background about me. I have an undergraduate degree in geography from the University of Nebraska, and then I moved to Denver and started working for an environmental consulting firm. Did primarily mapping work, GIS work for them for 5 years. And then went on to get my master's degree in planning from the University of Colorado at Denver, and then moved here and started working for the city of Oak Harbor as an associate planner. And so I was with them for 4.5 years, and then I've just recently joined City of Monroe. So it just gives you a little bit of background about my work.
Well, excellent. Welcome.
Thanks.
Hey.
So be nice.
Oh, I'm always nice. You can just ask anybody. Okay. With that, we move on to the public hearing. The hearing tonight is on MMC Chapter 15.01, Stormwater Management Code Amendment. And the proposed amendments to Chapter 15.01 of the Monroe Municipal Code is to comply and be consistent with the requirements of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, which is the MPDES. Phase 2 stormwater permit, including but not necessarily related to minimum requirements or best management practices. With that, I guess, Scott, are you taking the reins on this one for the public hearing?
Yes, I am. Okay. Or I'm just sitting on the horse and having the reins flop around.
Okay, whatever. However you want to handle that, whatever it is.
Well, as you just mentioned, I'm filling in for Brad Faulberg, who presented this for our discussion on April 8th, talking about our current municipal code language pretty much says adopt the current manual that's pretty much could have been published yesterday. However, there's implied problems with that. The manual seems to get ahead of itself and has some bugs to work out. But the MPDES permit gives a time frame to implement, to be in compliance, if you will. And for this manual, we need to have compliance in the year 2016, have our codes and whatnot ready to go. So instead of city jumping out and saying current edition, we actually want to use the language in the MPDES permit and follow it to be in conformance, because right now, technically, we're out of compliance with how the wording and the dates are set up. So if anything, it's really just to get in line with today's codes and how the language is going on. Because when our code was originally written, early 90s, well, things are a lot different now than it was back in 1991 or so. So we need to update the language in the code to better reflect the NPDES program that everyone's dancing to. So my understanding tonight is that we're on to the next process. We had our discussion about it a month ago. Now we're doing a public hearing to hear public testimony about the proposed code amendment to 1501.
Okay. Yeah, and that's what we're here for. I don't see anybody here tonight. I think that the next thing we need to do then, that's all you have, Scott, as far as your presentation?
That's all I have.
Okay. And then I guess the next thing we need to do is open the public hearing for public testimony. Commissioners, do we need to make a motion for that?
No, I don't think so.
I think we just open the hearing for public testimony. And there's, like I say, there's nobody here for public testimony, so I'll entertain a motion to close the public testimony portion of the hearing.
So moved.
Second. It is moved by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Sherwood. All in favor, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so the public hearing, public testimony of the hearing is closed. And I guess we move on to any discussion by commissioners. Anybody having a discussion about this? Jeff?
I'm definitely confused. It's a large task, but until 2016, are we going to be under the existing code until we're forced to get under the new regulations?
Yeah, in a sense, we're running with the 2005 DOE manual, which has been around for 7 years, 8 years, and they just released a new manual, which caused a lot of confusion. And,
excuse me, is that the one for which there is no software to interpret it yet?
That's one of it, yes.
Okay. So it has issues.
It has issues.
And you have until 2016 to deal with all those issues.
Yes. Software companies have a few years to get it right. And then the NPDES program gives this window of, I guess here's about 3 years. For jurisdictions to adopt the new regulations.
So if someone comes in for a permit to do a plat a year from now, with what will they be burdened in regards to storm drainage?
We'd still be running with the 2005 manual, which is, in a sense, that's what all the red line is in the revised code.
Okay. So at what point and what action needs to occur in order for these new requirements to take effect?
Now, I do not know exactly the time frame. If we can advance forward and go ahead and adopt 2012 at some later point, but I think at some point, though, it need to be adopted. And so, therefore, I'd say it's probably 2016 that we would have it.
Okay.
We fall into the new code.
So the further we can put it off, the less burdensome it will be to those with whom it applies.
Yes. I mean, typically as it goes, as the manuals get updated every so years, it gets tougher and tougher. And this last one has caused a pretty big deal amongst the design and consultant community, some questioning even how this can be possible to meet. So
Brad said at a prior meeting concerning this that developers who were looking at it and trying to understand it thought that it may take 3 acres of a 5-acre tract to comply with what they see coming down the road. then the other 2 acres you get to build on. Is it that ridiculous?
I've heard even worse, and I've heard not so bad. So right now, it's fairly...
Nobody knows because the software doesn't exist.
Right. So the new manual, in essence, really wants to push low-impact design, saying if your site at all can utilize low-impact design, do it. If you choose not to, that's the trouble. If you choose not to, then they really put the thumb screws on you. And some developers or consultants have said you can't develop if you ignore LID options. However, if you're on a project site that just based on the terrain, the soil, or whatnot, LID features aren't an option for you, they're not feasible, then you can go ahead and design essentially what's kind of like what the current manual allows you to do. So that's the challenge there, is they force certain issues on you, and if you can't use it, then they pretty much are saying, the developers are saying, it's impossible to meet the hydrology requirements.
Okay. So with the picture as it stands right now, is there any mechanism by which the city can push back and say, you know, don't even develop the software because it's too stupid to even waste the money developing the software?
Well, yeah, back when the 2005 manual was first released, Snohomish County didn't agree with it based on a lot of the terrain that Snohomish County has, a lot of underlying till. Made a lot of the Department of Ecology's manual not really feasible, and so they fought it. But they held out for a long time. Then the national, the NPDES program kind of pretty much came along and said, you guys have to be in compliance at this date. And the county pretty much was facing a pretty hefty lawsuit. As such, you know, the county eventually adopted the manual. So
they didn't have it shoved down their throat. Is there any extant litigation?
Right. There could be. And I'm hearing it.
Okay.
But I mean, there's people who want to repeal it or appeal it, I guess, the code, and argue about it. And this seems to be a recurring cycle: new code, a lot of argument, a lot of appeal,
and then choke down your throat. Repeat.
Mm-hmm. 5 years later. So.
Thank you for your time,
Commissioner Demarest.
Did not Snohomish County and the development community find out a way to work with it?
They
certainly didn't stop developing in the county.
They didn't stop developing in the county. They wrote some of their own code. They outright adopted the erosion control part of it to the current manual, or 2005 manual, I should say. But in essence, the Department of Ecology allows you to develop your own. However, they look at it. They say, if it's like ours, fine. If it doesn't meet the same thing we do, then, well, essentially they can sue you to get you into compliance.
And what we're proposing to do here is, I take it, somewhat consistent with what other municipalities in the state are finding themselves doing?
Yeah, I don't know what the other municipalities have for their code. Some municipalities have this same language like we had, current edition, and I think they're probably faced with the same trouble. And other municipalities are more in line with the timeline that the NPDES provides. And they let a few years roll through as people get used to this and iron out the bugs. And that's what we're proposing to do, is just more or less ride the wave instead of get hit by it.
So it doesn't necessarily mean the world is ending.
No.
And we'll figure out a way to work through it.
Yes. I mean, in the end, there will be development, but it gets harder.
Yeah.
So...
Well, the good thing's all gone, right?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Commissioner Ryland?
At the last meeting, Brad made a statement. It has been bugging me ever since. I haven't had a chance to talk to him. He was saying that the stormwater we pump into the river out here, we have to pay mitigation fees to the French Creek Flood District, which is down the line here. And if that's the case, is Sultan paying it? Is Duval paying it? Is Falls City paying it? You know, if the water all runs down the river, I got thinking, why do we have to pay them for the stormwater we pump out?
Commissioner Dumas.
I think the answer to that isn't the river per se itself, but rather the infrastructure gets it from here to the river, including the French Creek's pumping stations that gets it out of the French Creek drainage ditches that have to be maintained. And that's what we're paying for as a city for our stormwater from when it leaves our western boundary. Scott?
I'm a little fuzzy on this, but that's ringing a bell. I think we have a pumping system in place to get it.
Well, we don't. We have gravity.
Oh, right.
But they have a pumping station to get it out of the river valley into the river. Sultan doesn't contribute to that district. They get into the river further out. Yeah. If that helps at all.
Doesn't help, it's all right.
Commissioner Shirley.
I'm going through my mind trying to think of a time when development regulations ever have become less onerous. And I failed to find one. And that's why I'm concerned that we should do whatever we can as far as being ahead of the curve, trying to figure out a way not to impose this nonsense on people who try to do business in this town. I guess that's the bottom line for me. Because it is nonsense. As a soil physicist, I can say that. It's nonsense.
Well, the code that you see in the proposed 1501 section is familiar to consultants. They've been working with that language for years. So just kind of stemming the tide a little bit before the more stringent manual rolls in.
Commissioner Demarest?
Well, isn't it fair to say, Scott, too, that whatever we do, we can't do less than what the state imposes itself?
Yeah, I mean, we're working to the state program, and the state in turn is trying to meet the federal program. So,
right.
I mean, we're all, it's not just being picked on, Monroe. Everybody has to work with it. The division between is pretty much the Cascade Mountain Range. How much does western Washington have to do compared to eastern Washington? It's a little bit different. But on the west side of the Cascades, we pretty much are all doing the same type of stormwater controls.
But it's not really a Monroe issue. It's an Olympia issue.
Oh, okay.
And then it's a D.C. issue. To get to Mr. Sherwood's comment, we can't throw it out or even cut it in half.
We'll see.
I have a couple questions on the document itself. This is a good time.
Well, go ahead.
First off, and this obviously is not a substantive one, but there is a typo on page 9 of the red line text. Third line from the bottom, you see a space between two words. It's the sentence that starts with wetlands, again on page 9.
I got it.
Okay. The one that there's a lot of stuff in here. I'm not a soil, what did you say, physicist? I'm not going to try to even claim to be close to one. But when I look at the definition for effective impervious surface, and that's on page 4, and it's a new insertion in here in red in the red line. And I look at that second sentence there where it talks about impervious surfaces on residential development sites are considered ineffective if the runoff is dispersed through at least 100 feet of native vegetation in accordance with BMT 2530. So, in other words, and I think most of the stuff has been cut and pasted from the federal document, or the state document.
Yeah, there's Department of Ecology.
Right. But, so if I read that right, even if we're dispersing to a mile of native vegetation, it would still not be considered to be effective. Is that my understanding right?
What it's implying here is that if you're able to, I'll give you an example. Let's say you had a driveway, if you will, and that driveway is tipped so that it drains into the grass.
Right.
And that grass has a flow path of at least 100 feet.
Okay.
Then that driveway, for hydrology purposes, is not considered an impervious surface. It could actually be modeled as lawn.
But is that what that sentence said? That says impervious surfaces in residential development sites are considered ineffective
if the runoff is dispersed, et cetera.
So what that's implying is it's ineffective in terms of causing increased runoff due to the hardscape being put down there.
Maybe it's just a word choice of words, because when we're talking about defining what is an effective impervious surface, am I the only one wrestling with that language?
I wrestle with that language.
Yeah, it makes sense. I feel better. Can you offer any insight?
Yeah, what he's saying is that when you model storm runoff, you have to have some estimation of what kind of yield you're going to get.
Quantity.
So if it falls on trees, falls in grass, falls on gravel,
sure.
Okay, it's going to infiltrate.
Mm-hmm. Not gravel.
Yeah, like in a gravel pit or something. But in any case, when you have it fall on the driveway, you get basically close to 100% yield of the water. What he's saying is you get effectively zero if you have enough area to absorb the water beyond the reach of the driveway.
And I see that logic. I see the rationale and I understand it. I just don't see this paragraph as saying that.
To me, agree. I think the word ineffective is inappropriate.
They're kind of saying not included.
Yeah.
It's something like that.
It just seems like it's intended to be an example, and then it would more effectively say if it said are considered effective if the runoff is dispersed through at least 100 feet.
That's what's on my mind, and it seemed like it should say effective, not ineffective.
The problem is the word ineffective.
Yeah.
Because it's in effect saying, you disperse through 1,000 feet if you want. We're going to say it's in residential development, and that dispersal is ineffective. See where I'm coming from, Scott?
Oh, I understand your take on it. I have the trouble is that, you know, I've used this code for years, so my mind's already figured it out, if you will. So I'm a little biased.
Sure, you've moved past the code.
Yeah.
But anyway, I raise it as a question. It doesn't seem right to me. The logic doesn't seem to be there, and it may just be a choice of words, and I just raise it as a question. That's all.
Well, one word perhaps we can use to say impervious surfaces on residential development sites are considered pervious. Okay, not impervious, but pervious. If you can disperse through so many feet of vegetation, yeah. You can switch it off.
Well, I appreciate that, but when we look at the definition in the first sentence, what an effective impervious surface, those impervious surfaces that are connected via sheet flow or discrete conveyance to a drainage system, that's an effective impervious surface. Okay? And then it just seems that we contradict it in the next sentence.
I see what you're saying on that part, yeah.
Paul, you see it?
Maybe ineffective impervious surfaces.
I think ineffective impervious surfaces is implying something that it's not at all pervious. It is effectively impervious.
I'm sure there are brighter minds than mine that have looked at it, but I don't get that.
But I still don't get why it's ineffective, which means pervious, if it's dispersed through a biosphere.
It's effective at shedding water. If it's ineffective, then it's good at shedding. So it's bad.
That's more in this case. Ineffective is
not good language. Yeah, it's very confusing, and I think the users. I mean, if someone from town's looked at this and.
Well, one of the things I like to point out in the very first sentence where it says those impervious surfaces that are connected via sheet flow or a discrete conveyance to a drainage system. So in a sense, I believe that sentence is saying you're not dispersing it through vegetation. You could be piping it. You could have it in a ditch, and in which that case, from a hydrology perspective, it's not really dispersing and absorbing runoff. It's zipping the runoff down to the next downstream point. But they're saying in the next sentence, it's ineffective, that is, not impervious, if it can be dispersed through at least 100 feet of native vegetation. So maybe, you know, first sentence kind of saying it's impervious surface if it's in a conveyance type drainage. It's not if it can be dispersed through native vegetation. I understand it's a play on words.
Why don't you take what you just said, put it in words, and put it in that paragraph out and put that in. That would be a good suggestion.
Okay.
Well, that's all I have. Thank you, Scott. I know you didn't write it.
No. Nor did I could tell it. You who wrote it, and I had no idea.
I think the bottom line is that it's a effective and ineffective are poor choice of words.
Yeah.
In this case, effective is essentially a negative performance function instead of being an efficient and positive function.
Yeah. Say not impacting. I mean, it could be a lot of different things that could be a lot clearer. Thank you.
I remember when I said the root that line doesn't get it. It was a long time ago.
I don't think this text came out of city language, did it?
No.
It came out of state language. Mm-hmm. I don't have anything else. It's a long, complex document that I know is there's a certain amount of housekeeping on our part in going through this process and adopting this. We're not going to rewrite it.
Well, you got a lot further down the road than I did. I got tripped up in the staff report. I tried reading the document and I got blood was running from my eyes, so I quit. There was a question on the discussion history that I had when we talked about. It was the second paragraph in the C part of the document. And it may be just me, but it says here that the bring the Monroe Municipality into compliance with the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Phase 2 stormwater permit by adopting new regulations on the schedule containment and permit rather than as soon as they are available. And that's that last part of that sentence is where I got tripped up. I wasn't really sure what was meant by as soon as they are available. Is that the proposed amendments or
the current
a new manual or can you straighten that up for me?
Well, yeah, so our current regulation, I think you might find it there. It just says stormwater regulations are to be designed to the current DOE manual.
Right.
And Department of Ecology, as you know, just released the new manual, which hasn't really been tried out yet. And a lot of people, though, out there are saying this is horrible. You know, they want to peel it and all this other stuff. But technically, as soon as that manual was released, the next day if the developer came out to develop a plat, he would have to go with a 2012 manual because we say current manual. And what we're saying is our code should really be written to follow the NPDES program timeline for implementing that new manual. And that's all we're wanting to do is to follow that, let a few years of bugs and stuff kind of get worked out. And see how the region, if you will, is working with. And they may have some amendments to the manual at that point, or they might have some software that works at that point.
That helps me out. It's just, I guess, the way that that was worded at the end of that paragraph, it just I had a hard time with it. But you just spelled it out for me pretty well.
Okay.
Bill, just one question on that, if I may. I can see where the confusion came from. If the acronym for NPDES was put in there instead of the word permit, then it would clearly be the schedule within the NDPES that we're talking about. Would that have helped?
Yeah, that would have helped. I think so. I think that would have made a little more sense.
The permit just being there, lowercase, it was like, what permit are we talking about?
So maybe contained in the NPDES permit?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And probably with a comma after it.
Right. Gotcha.
Might save you a little headache tomorrow night.
Scott, is there any idea how much time before, you may have stated it earlier and I might have missed it, before they try and get this thing straightened out, get all the bugs worked out, as you said?
Well, I have been, don't have my ear tuned to the community out there for trying to figure out how this goes. I know that they have workshops with the new software. I think their, you know, version, whatever, the software is trying to model it per the new 2012 manual.
Mm-hmm.
I know, so I mean, it's actively going on. I know that a lot of agencies out there are, if you will, up in arms about the current code, and things need to be worked out. So usually what we see is that give an inch, they'll take an inch. Give a mile, they'll take a mile. So if you got 3 years, they're going to take 3 years, you know, to implement this new manual.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in the meantime, we're going to go with MPDES verbiage in our...
Yeah, and that, a lot of that has to do with the timing of the new manual. And then, essentially, the stormwater codes that developers will adhere to follow the 2005 edition of the DOE manual that's currently in effect right now.
Okay. And Jeff, I guess the MPDES verbiage is what you're concerned about?
Yes.
Being too restrictive? But we have pretty much no choice but to do something, since we aren't in conformance, right, with the... Because our documentation's so old.
Yes.
Is that right?
Our documentation needs to be updated. Yes, it's out of compliance. I don't think DOE would mind if you jumped on 2012, but I think all the consultants and the developers would have trouble, and so would our staff, for trying to review something that effectively can't be designed to right now until they get a few more items ironed out.
So what would be the repercussions if we did say we wanted to wait
for 2016?
Yes.
I don't see any repercussions. Okay. I mean, everyone's allowed to take this time to implement the new regulations into their code. They're allowed to take these years to do that.
That's what this is doing for us, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Commissioner Rodden?
There's a little history on this project. I was on the end from the beginning. It started out before growth management. It started out with Snohomish County. And Snohomish County was going to tax the water right off your roof by the amount of roof service you had. And the people got so mad about it that they voted it down. And then they kind of snuck it in later as a utility district. And that's how it got started. Shortly after the growth management act started, it was out of utility district. That's the history of this thing. And not too many people are happy about it.
Commissioners, anything else? Well then, I'd be willing to entertain a motion.
Oops. To close the public hearing.
To close the public hearing. Well, wait a minute. We have to have a motion for action. What we're going to... Yeah, we have to close the public hearing. You're right. Okay.
I'll make a motion to close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion made by Commissioner Demarest to close the hearing, seconded by Commissioner Rodland. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Now I'm ready to entertain a motion on the
appropriate.
Commissioner Demarest.
Scott, just with regard to that effective, ineffective, do you see anything that can be done there? Is it something we should incorporate perhaps into a motion? Or do you think that's just, that is what it is and let it go?
Trying to...
It was on page 4, I think.
Page 4?
Yeah.
I got to fold it over. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I think there might be some room to play with the language, if you will, to make it a little clearer. I know from engineers who are faced with the code, they're probably figuring this out, but it's a play on words that gets people tripped up. We could, as long as we keep the intent of what that effective impervious surface definition means. Before we had things like coarse asphalt, coarse concrete, or stuff like that, they didn't have to use the words effective, because it's either impervious or pervious. But when we came into things that are hardscape but allow water to go through it, then they had to start using effective impervious. So it wasn't too long ago that they had the word effective in there. But we can...
That's enough for me.
I'm trying to figure out what the process is to direct staff to come up with a new way of saying things there.
You've answered my question.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. I'd be happy to make a motion.
Okay.
Make a motion that we make a recommendation to City Council approve CA 2013-02 Stormwater Management Regulations. As the proposal complies with the Monroe Municipal Code, the Conference Plan, and other state and federal regulations, with the note that requesting staff to look at the definition of effective impervious surface in light of the discussion tonight to see if there's some wordsmithing that can be done to make it more clear.
We got that pretty good, David? I'm not going to repeat that. But I will entertain a second.
I will second the motion.
Okay, motion made by Commissioner Demarest, seconded by Commissioner Shirley. Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, Scott. That was very good.
We were going to bring that back next week for a recommendation, but very happy to take that tonight.
That's okay, right? With you?
Yes.
Instead of just directing you to do it, we did.
Well, it was included in the staff report, the suggestion, so I thought it was ready to go.
Okay. All right. We have the next action item is the workshop. CPA 2013-A Comprehensive Plan Text Amendments for Land Use. And Paul, you have a comment?
Yes. This is a beginning first look at what we're trying to do with the land use element. I'm sure you've seen that we did not get to doing much way of editing in the body of the text. We plan to bring it back next week at our normal second meeting of the month next week with some suggested edits throughout the rest of the text. But I thought it might be useful to start with the goals and policies section and then work our way back through some of the other material. But the intent of this is not to make substantive changes or to change the intent of the language, but to do some cleanup in a couple of ways. One is to, what I'd like to do is to reduce some of the wordiness and some of the inaccuracies. But more importantly, there are some things that have been completed or no longer apply or have changed since the 2005 plan was written. North Kelsey, for example, or there was something about extending sanitary sewer services. Some things like that are no longer relevant since they are completed. But thought it might be useful to go through the goals and policies just to get some reaction on what we've done so far, knowing that I'm going to come back next week with a good bit more. And actually following that, we're going to be trying to bring the housing element of the schedule in your cover sheet, and on with economic development and a couple of others. So there's more work coming up. But it's your pleasure if you want to go through some of this material and see if you have any questions or comments or suggestions. We'll take them back and continue working.
What page is that?
27. Basically starts on 27. And I just started to do a little bit in that first section. Actually, it's the first policy is a description of all these land uses, which I don't know if, I don't think that belongs in the policy section. That's more descriptive text that should be included in concert with the land use map in the preceding text, in the body of the text, not as policies. And that's an organizational thing that I'd like to pull off. One of the problems I had when I first read this, when I first came, was I could see the future land use map, the one map in this element, but there was no language with that map to explain it until I got to this very last section. So some reorganization, I think, is appropriate to make it flow. And if you recall, we came up with limited access or limited open space airport definition last year as part of the first airfield. Mm-hmm. A lot of other updating to do in these first couple of pages.
There's no land use map in here now.
In this, I guess we didn't include it, did we? If we help, I can make a few quick copies.
That's what we had last week. The map you had.
Oh, last week.
Was it last week?
No. This is the first time this has come up with information. We had a natural environment, I think, at our last meeting in April, which had a couple of two or three maps in it.
Maybe
it's
the latest zoning map.
That's what
it was. I get that. I'll make copies of the land use map.
Can we get it on the screen in front of us?
There is a, under planning and permitting, under departments, there is a, in the left column, there's a maps call out. And you can call up the comprehensive plan map. Can't think about that.
Paul, you might be able to.
You can
bring it up.
Clean up on here?
Yeah. You have to get out of
there. There you go.
Back to the home page to the departments.
Home page?
Here we go.
see the
that covers most of it.
Yep.
Thank you. So that we can go over in more detail the results of that billable land report for both population, well, it's for land capacity, population, and employment, which is a direct feed into the land use scenarios.
Because when I looked at it, it looked like there were some deficiencies, and it seems to me those deficiencies are going to have quite an effect on this.
Yeah, there's a direct translation from that to this comp plan, as there should be.
Commissioner Demers?
Paul, thank you for your introduction. And yeah, you're right, there's a lot of updating needs to be done in the body of the document. It is fairly old data in many cases. There are things that have changed. So I look forward to the discussions on that, because I think there will be some fairly lengthy ones in part. But certainly, I'm ready to jump into the development goals and policies and talk about some of the stuff the staff has suggested there. Questions that I had that came up as I reviewed it. I can certainly see the logic behind taking the different land use classifications and putting that into the front part of the document rather than back where they are now at this point. With that in mind, it seems to me that we need to add the mixed use zones to that, because they really don't really fall under anything else. And obviously, when this document was written last, we didn't have that, the mixed use neighborhood commercial and mixed use commercial, so it needs to be included in there somehow.
Right. And actually, I have some. I haven't come up with anything specific, but I question the number of residential zones in this comp plan. Residential 2 to 5 per acre. Residential 3 to 5 per acre. 5 to 7 units per acre, and the zoning, and then 8 to 11 units per acre, which is it's a very light density multifamily. It's more like a townhouse type density, and then 11 to 20 per acre. They're pretty specific. And I question whether there's so much overlap between those, and searching for a way to simplify some of that, let the zoning code translate into more specific zones without giving too much leeway in the comp plan in terms of density. I really don't see the need for a distinction between 2 to 5 and 3 to 5 in the comp plan. And they're described a little bit differently. The 2 to 5 is almost a holding zone, or a holding land use pending future designations. Part of my mission is to simplify this and make it more understandable and more usable without having direct translation of each land use to a similar zone in the zoning code. That's, to me, I think that's too much detail at the land use level. Food for thought.
commission members.
So then that would necessitate a redrawn of the comprehensive plan map as well, would it not?
Right. This, I'm not talking about doing that in terms of this rewrite, this update, or this housekeeping, but in the 2015 update is something to think about.
But we're kind of laying groundwork for that, though, in this process, are we not?
We are at least thinking about it, but that would be a fairly substantial change if we were to do it now. I don't think it's appropriate to make substantial changes without going through a more participatory process for this.
Is it worth discussing at all at this point?
I think it is.
Okay. Absolutely. So then if I were to look at the comprehensive plan map under that scenario, I would see lands designated for residential use, and I would see lands designated for multifamily use. Is that what you're envisioning?
At least two, maybe three single family, but certainly, or perhaps detached single family, attached single family, and multifamily. Now, how that translates into some range of density is another question, but something that either defines in the comp plan or in the range of densities for single family that could include attached single family, which I think is the intent of the 8 to 11. To me, that's attached single family.
Well, I think historically, Wayne, you can probably comment on this even better than me, but historically, our 8 to 11 zone has been our multifamily zone.
Of the 8 to 11 range?
Uh-huh.
It's pretty light.
It is density for
multifamily.
And we now have the larger density, the higher density would be, was it 11 to 20?
Yes. 20 is a cap.
That I think 10 years ago, well, actually, it's not 10 years ago, but we didn't have that alone as long. My concern is, as I look at the comprehensive plan, I see that it lends itself to providing us with a certain amount of predictability as to where part of the town or part of the city is going to go. Future land use, it's in the name. And if we were to take and, for instance, had one residential zone or one residential classification, I should say, that included all different lot sizes, perhaps, then we might take an area that historically has been larger lots, and someone comes in and redevelops, perhaps, or develops if the opportunity presents itself, into a much higher density subdivision. And under the scenario that I hear you speaking to, that could happen. And it wouldn't lend itself much predictability for the other owners that are already there. Whereas this does in my mind.
Yeah, there still needs to be a distinct range, I think. Maybe the lowest density could be, call it something, rural residential, or I think we have this suburban residential zone, which is the, say, up to a couple units per acre. Then you get 2, 3, 4, 5 units per acre. Is that one land use that covers from 2 to 5? 5 to 7 can be distinctly different or perceived as denser than a 2 to 5. So it may be reasonable to have a very low density, a relatively medium, low to medium, and then a higher, like the 5 to 7. But I just don't get the reason for 2 to 5 and 3 to 5. I don't see a difference. They're defined a little differently, but it seems excessive to have two of the virtually the same types of development.
So you're suggesting 3 zones, and we have 4. 3 classifications, 4 classifications.
Yes. We have a lot of R4 in the zoning code, of course, the whole northeast area that is basically 4 units per acre. So we have, in the zoning code, we have, several zoning densities, but they're not very consistent in terms of how they're described or how they're defined.
Commissioner Sherwood? Would these low-density zones pass muster with the Growth Management Act?
have never been subjected to that scrutiny. And we came up with this issue with this limited open space zone. We discussed that when we were talking about Eastern Road. But that seemed to be completely out of character of being inside an urban road. And having, it would seem to be contradictory to have low density residential inside of an urban growth area, because it counters the point. And I think there's a lot of developers who have tried to do multifamily in town who would look at 11 to 20 as being regressive, because most towns have 30, 40, 50 per acre lease. Is there any, has there been any talk of accommodating that, like in the old downtown area, trying to achieve those densities that provide an economy of scale for a developer and bring population in to get us in compliance with, you know, the capacities we're supposed to be accommodating? What do you think about that?
But in the downtown and mixed use corridors, there is a potential and entitlement for potentially for higher density. I'm not sure, I can't give you a number, but
with beyond 20. And so on and so forth.
Pardon me?
Using incentives and that sort of thing, or?
Well, just based on the wealth regulations, okay. The more flexible lot coverage, setbacks, allowable building height, in both wealth for mixed use and multifamily. Of course, the whole intent of that was to incentivize and encourage higher density infill housing in those areas, more so the west half of the mixed use and certainly in the downtown area.
So how about the low density zones and their compliance with GMA?
That I'd have to check into how that relationship is, how that connection is made in terms of GMA. But my first reaction is I don't know that we're conflicting with GMA, as long as we're paying attention to the overriding goals, of course, which are subject to a wide interpretation.
Commissioner Dumaris?
Yeah, I was here when we adopted that zone, that land use, the LOS, and it was because we were trying to figure out what to do with that particular piece of property, or properties west of east of town. And to answer that question, the discussion we had back then was that the state was imposing, or defining, I should say, that as being urban was 4 units or more per acre. But it was on an average for the community as a whole. And so when that area out there was designated the LOS, 1-5, other areas in town were designated at a higher level of use. Yeah. So that the average in total, when you looked at the city as a whole, would satisfy that growth management requirement.
But we're now finding that is inadequate, well, as far as coming into compliance with, you know, what the plan is for population.
I don't know that I've heard anyone say that approach is inadequate or that the city is inadequate there, as much as the county saying the city maybe is inadequate in its ability to handle what we think it should handle. I think they may be two separate issues.
Well, in the buildable lands report, it's clear that they are of the opinion at the county level that we are not capable, with what's in front of us right now, accommodating the population that they've, you know, assigned to us.
But I think that's a separate issue from the GMA issue of what's urban and what's not.
The de minimis.
Yes.
Okay. Although I believe the intent for development within the urban growth area is not very low density residential. That should happen in the transition zone outside of the growth area. Because we have a finite amount of land area within the HDA. And we are still falling short of the need for 2035, but not nearly as much as in the past, partly because the population projections have been pulled down based on the last several years. But it's a subject for probably an entire meeting, the buildable lands information.
And I think you're absolutely right. And obviously this whole subject of
should we change the approach to designation in the city of Monroe and subsequent zoning, is a big question, as you say. If we broaden it, in my mind, in the comprehensive plan, then we make it easier to change at the land use level. Rezone frequently, right? You can't change comprehensive plans frequently. If you're restrictive to some extent in the comprehensive plan, that in turn restricts how often you can rezone or change use at the current planning.
Right. Level. But there needs to be a reasonable level of differences in the comp plan.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it doesn't become too broad. You would want to go from one single family residential zone that could, or air lanes that could take up to 7 units per acre, 0 to 7.
Well, there's some that might want to. There's some that might do that.
Which, yeah, would have to be pretty carefully qualified as to where those densities would go, or what the criteria they would have to meet in order to do those different densities. So it would be simpler to, yeah, certainly to have some categories in the land use plan, but not overdo it. And then right now they're overlapping considerably. But I would like to do as part of the reorganization to take the uses we have now and pull them back into the body of the text so that I understand what this map means before I get to the end of the chapter.
I think that makes sense.
On that
particular topic,
on that topic,
as
well. Yeah, on that topic. Commissioner Rodley?
The densities that the state says we're going to have, has anybody ever made a study of our, in the city yet, of all the empty houses and repossession houses that are sitting empty right now that could be people in? Because there's a bunch of them.
Yeah, but that's true about everywhere.
Yeah.
But no, it's based on existing houses, really. And that's, you know, an assumed number of so many people per household.
Yeah.
So it theoretically doesn't matter if they're occupied or empty. They're still part of that capacity, whether we have it or not. But yeah, it's a good question. The mathematics don't differentiate between occupied or vacant.
Right.
I've not seen or had sensed a tremendous amount of foreclosed property. Maybe I've not seen it. Do you have any sense of how much property out there is that is in foreclosure or
I'm not going to try to put a percentage on it. I can tell you that we sell a lot of foreclosed or bankrupt homes.
It's so invisible. Where I used to live in Arizona, it was very obvious which houses were foreclosed, and it was becoming a real problem. And even neighboring island, you could easily see where the failures were. But around here, I don't see that.
Does there?
With a few exceptions.
Yeah. Most of the newer houses.
Yeah. The neighbors may be cutting grass on those.
Just so, yeah. Just go around and see what the grass is and all.
I cut my neighbor's grass.
Commissioner Demarest.
Thank you. I'm looking at the insert ball on page 29 under the residential 11 to 20 dwelling units. I guess that does apply to both the downtown and the West Main Street corridor, doesn't it? At least the portion of the West Main Street corridor that's designated as the, or zoned as the mixed-use commercial. Doesn't apply to the mixed-use neighborhood commercial, as I recall.
I think that's right. There's a distinct difference between
the west half of the west bank.
Commercial,
east half of west.
Neighbor, neighborhood center, the east end, mixed use commercial to the west.
Right.
There's more of a predominance in deliberate, what, conservation of single family structures, whether they be businesses or homes. And we took away those restrictions in the west corridor.
So I don't, and perhaps we want to put some sort of clarifier in there, West Main Street corridor, western portion or something.
Yeah.
That relates to that, just so that there's no thought or perception out there that we're trying to include the more historic part of Main Street, the mixed-use neighborhood commercial section, as it's currently zoned.
Actually, we're on that subject. If you flip back to the residential 2 to 5 per acre, I'm trying to find the right sentence here. Maybe it was in the zoning ordinance, the description of the 5 to 7. When we were talking about Roosevelt Road rezoning, the neighbors brought forth the site of the definition, I guess it was in the zoning code, of 5 to 7 units per acre that were located almost exclusively very near, very close to major commercial development and major circulation routes, arterial and so forth. And using that as a, and putting that forth as an argument where this northwest Roosevelt Road area, which is somewhat removed, relatively speaking, from major commercial and arterials, should not be changed to that higher density, 5 to 7. Or, I'm sorry, the 6,000 square foot lot as opposed to 9,600. I may be confusing the zoning code and counseling descriptions, but I think those descriptions, we're going to keep all these for now, need to be tweaked just a little bit more to be a little more descriptive or a little more specific. So there's some editing to be done on these first, what, 3-4 pages that I've not completed yet.
Commissioner Demarest?
Well, the 2 to 5, paragraph 3 on page 27, that really is the R4 zone, isn't it? That translates or works into the R4 zone. It's Milwaukee Hills.
Basically.
And the paragraph 4, the 3 to 5, that's the UR96 zone.
Right.
That's a good chunk of West Monroe. And so I think that certainly, at least in the past, there was a desire to keep, and this goes toward the goal of the land use element, of maintaining a diversified stock of housing in the city. There was always an intent for there to be a distinction between West Monroe and the Milwaukee Hill area, as represented by these classifications here that then in turn translated into the R4 versus the UR9600 zones. I would hate to see us lose the ability to have that sort of distinction. It sort of ties to the character of the neighborhoods. Now, could there be some language cleaned up in paragraph number 3? I suspect so. As I reread that paragraph now, it's got a lot of stuff in there that probably is not really, you know, where it talks about, range of potential residential densities anticipated within the northern portions of the city's unincorporated growth area. Well, most of that's incorporated now, for starters. So there's clearly updating that can be done in there. But, I mean, the 9600 zone we have, it's all flat land, well-drained in West Monroe for the most part. The R4, the 2 to 5, it's a different sort of area, geographically.
Different.
We've got hills, we've got extensive wetlands, we've got drainage issues, none of which we have down to at least of the same sort in the West Monroe portion.
Then we're relying heavily on that northeast and northern areas to help us build toward that, meet that capacity, that projected capacity, which is a little bit of a catch-22. But I'm not sure what the effective yield is on some of those subdivisions up there. You know, the Sinclair Heights is fairly dense. The Eaglemont, I think, which is R4, I believe is at just right around 4, maybe 4.2 units per acre gross. Bear Mountain, less than 4. That has quite a bit of wetland in it. But it would be an interesting exercise to go in that R4 area and try and gauge just how much. But the county has, in the Buildable Land Report, has actually done quite a bit of work on what's subtracting land that's not buildable and so forth to come up with some reasonable protection of capacity on that grand scale.
The net density.
The net density, right.
Right.
Net potential development. And there's more work to be done at that level. But in order to meet capacity, we're going to need to be discussing bumping the density in that northern part of the city, since we have pretty limited UGA area. And with Roosevelt Ridge not being annexed, I think we can preclude the whole lower density development of that by offering sewer, or you know, at least allowing sewer to be extended should someone come in and want to do some development, so that it doesn't necessarily default back to the 12,500 square foot lots for septic tanks. Because we'll pick up a lot of the capacity we need in that Roosevelt Ridge area. Matter of developers stepping forth.
Commissioner Sherwood.
Paul, I have a request. I don't know if it's reasonable, but I did an appraisal not too long ago in Newcastle, and there's a map available on their website that keeps running track of projects. And I'm wondering if, with our new GIS/planner expert, it might be possible to do that so that we can envision, when you talk about, you know, Sinclair Heights or Eaglemont or wherever, but, you know, we have a map that we can go to. I don't know if that's practical or not. I just want to throw that out there. But if there is a way it can get done, that would be helpful for me to envision what's going on there.
Short answer is yes, and we've talked about it, and it would help me too.
It would help me a lot as well. Being new here, just tied up on
working
on that. Okay. Yes, we're wanting to. Well, we do have a subdivisions map. It's pretty simple, but what I'd like to get together is a map that basically shows projects, and it's an ongoing, ever-changing map of development applications that are coming in of all types.
Renewed every 6 months or something?
Well, every month.
Or, yeah, whatever
it takes.
Yeah.
Melissa will have lots of time, lots of spare time. Well, that's definitely on our list of things to do, and apparently it used to be done a few years back by the active projects type mapping.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing anything like that myself, but
it was mostly internal.
Okay. We need to continue with this. Are we just going to be covering the policies and goals right now tonight? Is that what you want to do?
That, and if you got some thoughts on the body, I'd be happy to take any ongoing thinking on that. I'm going to be working on this rest of this week to get it out by the end of this week. It's already Monday night. But yeah, absolutely. But we'll let me go through the goals and policies. See if you get some other comments here. And we can certainly talk about, in general, some of these other sections. It'll help me in my first approach to editing this.
Commissioner Sherwood?
Are there any zones, you know, or comp plan designations, I should say, that you feel are passe or superfluous or no longer needed, and maybe you'd be better off without them? or do you feel more that you're creating more than you're going to be getting rid of?
Well, if anything, I would do less rather than more.
You already mentioned one in the low-density residential. Are there any other zones or compound designations?
Well, you know, our zoning code needs some serious work on uses and where they're allowed. That in some cases, I don't see a lot of distinction between service commercial and general commercial, although there is a difference. But that's a possibility, and the other would be we have public facilities, city, public facilities, other, public facilities, school. I think that could easily be collapsed into some kind of a public or institutional land use, a public land use, as opposed to open space, you know, parks, open space, or limited open space. But I think we have, I think it would be appropriate to reduce the what, 14, 15, and 16. Do we really need to differentiate between city and school and other? I mean, it's all institutional. Not institutional like hospital, but like city hall, like the school headquarters and so forth. But that, you know, that may be a substantial change that we don't make at this point. I'm not sure where to draw the line sometimes.
Commissioner Danley?
Just, Paul, you mentioned hospital, and I had that noted here. We've got the reformatory, the public library, the Evergreen State Fairgrounds mentioned, and other public facilities. We don't mention the hospital. Should that be mentioned in that?
Well, that's actually in a, that is an inst, that is a, in that institutional tradition, it's actually in the professional office zone.
Right, but it's a public hospital district. I mean, it's,
yes,
taxpayer-owned, supported.
And, you know, in my mind, that maybe should qualify in that if it's a broad institutional public zone, something like that, as opposed to, I mean, retail stores open to the public, but it's a whole different animal, as you know.
It just seems to be, you know, I saw the library, and I don't know if the library's there, why isn't the hospital there? It just didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. It was just a small comment on that.
The hospital's kind of lost in the mapping in this town. It's not apparent. And actually, signage for the hospital is interpreted, prescribed in the zoning code as conforming to the general commercial signage, which is an interesting twist.
And that was because of where in that zone it was located.
A little bit invisible.
Well, and it's proximity to Highway 2, whereas much of the other parts of that zone, the professional office, were down along Main Street.
And we don't have much, hardly any professional office left anymore.
We don't have, that's right.
There was a lot of it on the West Main Street.
There was.
I think the only stick and piece left is what's around the hospital.
I think you're right.
So that may be going away in some form or another, or being brought back as a distinct zone and changing some other designations.
We have one over going in over by the Lowell's though, too.
Yeah, the Providence building.
Yeah. But that's in the general commercial zone.
Right.
Yeah, it would be considered, you know, kind of a professional office use.
Right.
But, yeah, it is GC. I don't know if there's any problem mixing offices and retail. I guess you wouldn't build an office prime retail or business property. I mean, Providence is in a good place, but it's in general commercial.
Mm-hmm. Well, professional office in here in the paragraph 10, it says medical and dental clinics, so it still doesn't say hospital. Yeah, maybe that could be put in there. Yeah, hospitals.
It's really hard to segregate offices from commercial stores and offices. You know, unless there are some areas like office parks, we're not on the kind of scale that would support office parks under Redmond or so forth. But we kind of mix things up, which I think is good.
And there was been a reason for doing that in the past, and that was to recognize that when you talk about offices use, it's not a residential use, but we didn't want to open it up to general commercial either.
Right.
So you wanted to, you know, sure, you can put it into a general commercial use if you choose for zone, but you not don't want to allow the general commercial to go into what might be the professional office.
Right.
And that's how
Main Street's a good case for that.
Yeah, it was a compromise zone, you know, a crossover zone between. And I think it served us well in that regard.
And I think West Main will remain a good location for office type use, not strictly commercial, retail, standalone, as opposed to office spaces, which are, you know, draw a, it's a specific destination. I like to keep the retail concentrated in the downtown in North Kelsey and not disperse it too far. But there are some park owners that wouldn't agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
That have retail in the outlying zones. I'd also like to promote, I think in here somewhere it talks about neighborhood commercial in residential areas that now I don't think is allowed in the zoning code. But in the north, you know, North Chain Lake Road, in the R4 area, I don't know that I could put a small commercial center up there, a neighborhood commercial center.
That is actually in the north plan.
In the north plan?
North Hill.
North Hill.
Provision for that.
Yeah.
It's never happened, yeah, but it's certainly been looked at over the years and thought it would be desirable.
Yeah. Not anything of any significance, but neighborhood.
Kind of like commercial. Park Place down here. We got a little store, we got a little restaurant. It can go very well.
Used to be a, you know, a video store was kind of a neighborhood store. They're long gone.
I had a question on page 31. LUP 1.3. Voice seems to be going away. Apologize. He's trying to tell me something. This section on concurrency review, and in particular the last part of that paragraph, which carries over onto page 32, and the change following language in that last sentence, where the city shall evaluate the impact analysis and determine whether the development will meet standards for concurrency versus whether that prior be served by adequate public facilities. Are we imposing a different standard there and perhaps a weaker standard?
I'm not sure that it's weaker so much as it is, I mean, in my mind, the concept objective of concurrency is the availability and construction provision of adequate public facilities. I mean, it's a misnomer to take out the adequate, but well, in my mind, adequate and concurrency are driving toward the same thing.
Are you saying?
It should be. They're one and the same, different words.
Yeah.
And it makes a reference to concurrency, the standards for concurrency, but that concurrency term needs to be spelled out in this chapter.
Well, the standard,
some of the other ones.
The standard for concurrency in the state of Washington is 6 years, is it not?
Yes.
Whereas, to me, being served by adequate public facilities says something different. To me, that said, it will have adequate roads. Whereas if we say it shall meet standards for concurrency, is saying it shall have adequate roads within 6 years.
6 years.
We hope.
I can see your point.
And concurrency, in my mind, under growth management, has always been a bit of a joke. I mean, you collect mitigation for concurrency for improvements. If the municipality doesn't spend it in 6 years, or I guess it's 10 now in some cases, and then it goes back to the developer and the improvement doesn't get done, but the development's gone in. certainly there's no concurrency in the true sense of the word as far as those improvements.
At least at the conceptual broad scale level. Yeah. Because, look at Foothills. Concurrency would have demanded that there be at least prior to the zoning code change, secondary access. And that was to happen eventually. It was what's the road that extends west of the stub, just north of Holderman? Extends to the west of Stubb, several hundred feet.
Well, 191st comes down the hill to the south and takes a jog to the southeast and stops. And that was supposed to be that frontage road that continued on down to Chainlink Road and went around the foothills.
There's no driver to meet that concurrency in 6 years, in this case, but over decades.
So I'm concerned with us weakening a policy when it comes to improvements necessitated by development. And if that's what it's doing, I think we need to be very cautious there.
I don't have a problem myself keeping the adequate standards.
Someone doesn't like it.
I see where you're coming from.
Someone didn't like it.
Well, I'm trying to emphasize the concurrency, and I see the problem of the timing. But even with providing adequate public facilities, there's a question of when do you provide those adequate public facilities?
Yeah, what's that?
I guess the way this reads is that it should be done at the time, but that's not always the reality. Mm-hmm. Like phase development, which will build one phase and never build 3, 4, and 5. We have a few of those. But yeah. I don't probably leave it the way it is.
Am I the only one that has any thoughts on that? Bridget shakes her head and says nothing. That doesn't help me much, Bridget.
Well, my thought is by saying by serve by adequate public facilities, because I agree with where that is also very loose, at least concurrency does put a limit. The other one is just wide open, could be whatever.
Well, concurrency puts a limit of 6 years.
Yes.
But adequate is a subjective term.
Adequate public facility, it just says
what
time frame.
Well, certainly if a development is proposed in the public facilities that are there, which I think by definition includes roads, does it not, Paul? Roads would be part of the public facilities?
What would?
Roads?
Yes.
If the roads are inadequate, as a level of service E, perhaps, then the new development's not exactly get served by adequate public facilities, is it?
But shouldn't it be a little bit more clear as to should be in place?
Look, my mind, serve would be in place. It's not there. It can't serve.
This all seems a bit moot because the whole idea was inside the UGA, all this should be done anyways.
How do you
think, well, it shouldn't be inside the UGA if it doesn't have adequate public facilities?
Well, there's lots inside the UGA that
it's in the UGA because it has adequate public facilities.
I disagree. Roads?
They get built.
Sometimes.
Utilities get extended. That's adequate public facilities. It seems a bit moot to me. We're saying we're going to do something that goes without saying.
Well, I'm not sure it's saying that, but I appreciate it.
There you go.
Well, are we going line by line through this, or we're just hitting the high points, or? I mean, a lot of it is, I get what you're saying, but there, most of the paragraphs have some pretty significant unclarities, like adequate public facilities. I mean, what's the definition of that? you said roads, he said utilities, who decides what's adequate, which things are the public facilities, what are the time frames? I mean, I remember when we went over this on the council too, it was, it's a kind of a frustrating document because it says a lot but doesn't really say much. So, I mean, we could go over every line and find issues with almost every paragraph that's on there as far as not being clear or well-structured.
Well, I think certainly part of our job here is to look at it.
Yeah, well then, and if that's what, I mean.
If we as individual commissioners have concerns with part of it, to speak up. And I've got some notations on some of the ones that I had concerns with and others I didn't. I don't know others that were improvements. And I don't need to say anything on those.
I think it would be a more useful document if it was more focused. And I don't know if this is pablum to meet the requirements of the county and the state. We have a comprehensive plan, look at us. Or can we be much more specific and much more focused, at least for the 10-year horizon which we're considering? Rather than saying, we sure would like to have some playgrounds in Monroe.
When, how, where?
Yeah, I don't know if it's possible, Paul, but we could maybe break with tradition here and actually have a much more useful and efficient document that would be maybe half the size of this monstrosity. So that it really says something instead of saying nothing. So that we say something to the people that are going to check the boxes and say, yeah, they have a comp plan over there in Monroe. Right? This is really not for them, it's for us. But it seems like a lot of these things are written for them. So, they have them. And we're not going to bother with them for another 10 years. A lot of us.
Keep it simple.
Yeah. And focus on the things that we are saying, and you know, our neighbors are saying, are really important, instead of, hey, let's keep some trees in Monroe.
Let's encourage planting.
That kind of stuff. So, I would like to, I don't know what influence we have as commissioners, give you permission to slash, lay waste to this idiocy that, you know, pervades this thing. In every other comprehensive plan I've read, I have to read, you know, doing appraisals, tell me nothing most of the time. They just tell me nothing. Yeah, we want parks and playgrounds, and we want to put this over here and this over here and connect the two somehow and that sort of thing. So I that would be my input. So that if we came 10 years from now with this, it would be, like Bridget says, rather than we could pick apart every one of these things. And what does that mean? That a lot of this is just so generalized, I don't think it does anything. I don't think it helps anything. And I can see how the council, you know, take this up. This is very frustrating because we have this giant document that maybe in half the size could say just as much, maybe more. So if that's what we're after, is shooting for, and we tell our consultant, hey, have we picked that up yet?
No, proposals are due on May 23rd.
Okay. That if we agree, that we convey to them, we don't want another one of these. We want something that is very focused, user-friendly, understandable by the citizens, and that really has some meat on the bones instead of this fluff that just seems to be incumbent in these documents. There I said it.
You did.
There's a monitor. Yeah.
Me too.
Good speech.
For instance, meet standards for concurrency, to me, says more than served by adequate public facilities. So if the issue is that the standards for concurrency are 6 years and we feel like that's too long, then we should say something else, but at least it's a specific goal, rather than served by adequate public facilities doesn't really say much to me. I know there's another section where it says we're going to work with Dream. That needs to come out because Dream's changing its name. I don't know. You know, there's the thing about the trees. Every goal that I read, I want to say, how? We're going to do this. How? What is it that we're doing? And we don't say that anywhere. So, you know.
Yeah, anything like Dream, I guess, that would have the ability to change down the road should probably not be in here. I agree with that. And I also agree with Jeff that the more words you put into a document, the more chances people are not going to like this little bit or that little bit and not understand this or not understand that. And to keep it simple, theory, yeah, is the a way of trying to keep the the discussions and arguments, or not arguments is not the correct word, but opinions of what this means and what that means. Take for example the Bible. You know, how many religions are there in the world based on the Bible? Because there's different interpretation. So it's the same thing. Take a look at this book here that he's got in front of him over here. That's bigger than the Bible itself. You know, how many interpretations could you have from that complaint? So the less you have to discuss, I think, the better off. Bridget?
I would do away with anything that starts with consider, encourage, enhance, coordinate. I mean, those don't say anything. Those aren't definable goals. Things like implement. I saw another one that doesn't make sense. Design, establish. Those things are fine, but
create.
Yeah, encouraging. I mean, how?
Is there anything more active and
consider
and explicit than? And fuzzy.
Well, it has to be a definable.
Or soft.
The goal, the end result has to be definable. Otherwise, there's no reason to have it there.
Oh, I wish Mr. Sachs was here. I can't believe I just said that. Because I just listened to you guys talk, and I'm working back in discussions. And the lectures that I've gotten on how a comprehensive plan cannot be a regulatory document. It is a policy document. It is supposed to be...
Policies have definable...
Well, they do, but they're soft in that they point you in a direction. The implementation, the enforcement, the establishment comes out of your regulatory documents. We're told time and time.
You don't have any of the other stuff in there.
Well, then let's just get rid of the comprehensive planning process.
Well, a lot of it, yeah. I'm down.
And that's not going to happen, folks. The state mandates this on us. It's not going to go away. It is, I think, smaller than the Bible. It has much more white space. And it's got a lot of stuff in it that you're just going to have to deal with. Now, do I disagree with you as far as fluff goes? No, I don't. Not at all. If there's just words in it to be words, don't do it. But there's a lot of stuff in here that helps point us in the direction of where this community is going to go over the next 5, 10, 20 years in drafting this regulatory instruments.
Yes. Okay, but saying develop downtown to be pedestrian, bike, and transit oriented with safe pedestrian connections throughout town. Okay, that makes sense. That gives a direction. But saying to encourage planting trees, how are we doing that? Implementing the downtown master plan. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. That has a goal. And it's definable. But create policies and regulations that promote alternative modes of transportation. I mean,
what?
I don't know. And I'm not saying throw out the whole comp plan. I'm just saying so much of it is useless.
And I remember the discussions in past years when out of that particular area came requirements in our development regulations for bus pull-ups. And through that, because it was addressed in the comprehensive plan, there was a basis for bringing it forward and including the development regulation, even though the developers cried out, oh, it's going to cost us so much more money. So those things do point us toward that end result. Albeit softly, perhaps, and not with a big stick.
In fact, there is a missing, kind of a missing link in this, and that is taking policies and the next step, which is really implementation, and coming up with action steps for these policies. And normally you would assign them things like short-term, long-term, short-term, medium-term, long-term, say 0 to 3 years, 3 to 5 years, 5 to 10 years, something like that. And prioritize in that way, and then you can actually monitor and report progress or lack of progress based on what has been done or what is not working and what maybe isn't so important.
And maybe what needs
so
to change.
So that's another, you know, another aspect of this that probably that should be a part of the 2015 plan. It gives it some kind of measure and accountability. But every comp plan, pretty much every comp plan I've read, I've reviewed with Jeff to a large extent, is very wordy. The last couple of times I've done this, I spent a lot of time reducing and trying to make sensible sentences. It's easy to write too much and fill it with fluff and smoke. It's much more difficult to pare it down to meaningful. Part of the problem with this plan, particularly like every other one, is that there's so much information that it gets lost, and you can't glean some of the information. But there's an awful lot of material that has to be, like Dave says. We have to set the descending state goals, county planning policies, and city. And there's a direct line between those, cutting really all the way down.
Here's your dream.
If I could go global for a second, what are we really trying to accomplish right now? Are we trying to provide some direction to the consultant how we want this process to go by going through section by section?
What we're trying to do is clean it up for the consultant so that they have a better starting point.
Is it fair to throw that process on you when they're going to be reviewing it? I mean, is there a redundancy there, or is this, do you think this will be an efficient process?
Well, I think it will help, especially if we do cutting and reducing the amount of words, and particularly taking out things that are no longer relevant. Because with the consultants, you know, it's a $500,000 contract or a budget, and time is money. So I'm then coming from a lifelong consultant. I'm very sensitive to being able to efficiently spend consultant time on the real meat of this and not spending too much time trying to sift through a wordy, inaccurate document. And there are a lot of instances where it can be reduced and or changed or deleted because it's been trying to eliminate some of the fluff.
Has it been made clear to the people who are bidding that we will provide them a certain level of introduction guidance, which will help make their process more efficient and less expensive? Is that right?
Yeah, they know that we're working through some of this to clean house. But then, of course, they're going to take that and really start from scratch with this whole visioning process in the beginning to see where this thing should go.
But they will not be driving the vehicle. They'll be in the passenger seat listening to us. Is that true? Because, you know, we have someone come in from out of town, they say, well, you know, we think you should do this and this and this and this. I realize there'll probably be some of that will be coming in from the city, and they'll have obviously their recommendations.
Sure, sure.
But they understand that we're driving this thing.
Yeah, well, in the beginning, it's going to be driven, ideally, by the public. What's important? And what I'm relying on the consultant for, among other things, is to sort that out and then and bring us recommendations. You know, bring us, what are the best management practices? What should we be thinking? But of course, they're going to be driven by this group and the council. Well, staff, this group, council. We'll take what they give us and we'll bring it, and then you'll bring it, and the council will bring it, and eventually we'll hopefully get to a good product, products. It's going to be a long haul, a lot of time. And it's going to be really critical to pick the right consultant.
Commissioner Tuttle?
Thank you. So when the recommended action is review and discussion of land use element, I think I need some a little more specific, like what is, do you want to have on May 20th where we sit and go line by line through the document, or are we just chatting about it, or?
Well, I intend to bring a redlined body of text, and what I'm looking for is, in a way, general guidance. I don't think we need to get into line by line editing, wordsmithing, but there are some pieces like on policy board, like wordsmithing, it means different things to different people, so we can maybe mark some time back in this section, because this is where the meat really is. This is where it gets very specific. Most of this back here is descriptive and informational. It's not prescriptive, but the policies are getting to be pretty specific. And I think that's where the more input is more important. I'm going to take a shot at the statement with my red pen and my editing pen and try and reduce some of that. I had one where I just wanted to throw the plan out the window about every day in trying to rewrite it.
Commissioner Demarest?
I had thought that tonight's purpose was you'd ask us to look at, in particular, the red line sections, which is what I did. Mm-hmm. And I do have comments throughout that. Not on every one of them, because many of my thoughts were fine, and many as they were revised were fine. But yeah, I do have some comments on a number of them.
Should we wait until Paul has a chance? You're going to take another shot at this thing, and is there any way we can have it available to us by Friday?
Yeah, well, of course, our goal is to get these by Wednesday or Thursday. We rarely make that.
Done, just so we have a weekend to...
Oh, yeah, it will be at the latest Friday. And it probably will be Friday.
And how will it differ from what? I don't have a redline copy. I couldn't bring up the PDF. How will it differ from this document that Dave has here?
The first 25 pages have no redline.
Yeah. Okay.
The rest of them do.
History books. Yeah. I basically start on page, 26 or 27, whatever it is.
So
26.
Wouldn't it be better then to wait until we have that from you? To go through this process.
Well, we've got it. It was in our pack.
But as I said, I couldn't pull it out.
You'd say there's really two different sections. One's descriptive and one's prescriptive. And, you know, the story and then the policies.
So that could be more forceful. I would like to wait until next week to go through this process rather than do it now and then do it again then.
We actually have one item on the agenda next week. Since we're not doing strong.
That would be my hope. that, so that I could have a red line copy before the weekend that I could see what the thoughts are in mass.
Am I the only one that got the red line?
Yep. I have the red line. But I'm just trying to grasp all this right now. So.
I also got the red line, but I didn't think that our opinion of a lot of it mattered. I thought it was, to me, the red line was, yeah, it's as good as the other stuff in there, but I don't care for it.
I'm willing to entertain it if Commissioner Demarest would like to give his input as to what he saw on some of these red lines that would help Paul bring next week some of the changes that might be made. That's my opinion.
I'm sort of appreciative of that, if everyone else is opposed to it.
If you would like to give your input, I think Paul would appreciate it.
Then we move to extend the meeting beyond 9 o'clock.
I would second that.
Okay. Commissioner Sherwood, move to extend meeting past 9 o'clock, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. I'd like to see LUP 1.8 perhaps expanded just a little bit. I don't want to add words here. I won't get anyone irate about that. But LUP 1.8 talks about connectivity between developments, residential commercial developments, etc. And I'm just wondering if this would be a place where the issue of these long dead end streets could be raised. Mm-hmm. We spent quite a bit of time on that earlier this year with the one the rezone up there by Foothills. It's been an issue, I think, in other areas. Clearly, we've had some development in the past that has and still does lack from alternative access routes, and that's going to grow out of something that's in our comp plan. And maybe it's already there adequately if the council wants to act on it, but maybe a little bit more point could be brought to the issue by modifying a little bit of language, and maybe this is one of the places where it would happen, or maybe it would be in the transportation element. I'm not sure, Paul, I leave that up to you. But when we talk about connectivity, it just seems that it came to my mind mm-hmm. that it would be a good place for it.
I think this might be a place for it, and then I think it's really fleshed out in the transportation element.
Mm-hmm.
In that,
with some more specificity?
With more specificity.
I know. So I think if that's the right place for it, I think that would be great. I think we've gone down a bad path there, and we need to rectify that.
I'd like to see the city reverse the decision from several years ago about the infinite length of road.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Without any maximum dead end.
On the next page, LUG3, the North Kelsey area, I was just trying to think of that in the context of what's left in the development plan for North Kelsey. And is this really still an accurate section, given what we've done with the plan in the last year or 18 months?
Actually, that was the goal that was adopted as a part of that comp plan amendment.
Okay.
This and the policies. I mean, we would add a few more words here and there. But it's still... It's not the pedestrian environment, but it is still a mixed use in a sense, at least on a horizontal scale.
But is it vibrant?
Is it vibrant? You know, it's not vibrant in the same way as a downtown should be vibrant. Vibrant's probably a good word for the old plan,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily the way it's turned out.
Okay.
But vibrant in terms of economic.
In LUP 3.1, we changed, or it's being proposed to change from ensure that new development to encourage new development that meets the goals. Are we, in effect, watering this down? I recognize that we can't necessarily ensure it, especially if we don't own it. we mean the city, that is that a direction we want to go with? Bridget, I mean, so you indicated you might agree with what I said there, and might want to...
Well, I think encourage is a silly word, so...
Okay.
Frankly, I struggle with that one some as to whether to keep it or not. I think I was doing something else that I did a soft verb instead of a hard verb, and I ended up changing this to a softer verb.
Would promote...
Let's stick with that short.
Would promote be a better word?
Let's make it different. I'm sorry?
Would promote be a better word? Maybe?
Yeah, promote, encourage, kind of means the same thing. Ensure is a more direct, active version of promote.
And if we were to go so far as to say that something that new development shall meet the goals of the plan,
but that's
then
not
it becomes too prescriptive to be
policy. Right. I guess that's a general question. Should these policies be more hard action, like ensure, or like Bridget was talking about, or do we... Not across the board, but more generally less soft, like encourage or consider, think about.
You will.
Think
as opposed
about.
To not do it, but much stronger than encourage, like ensure. Mm-hmm. Ensure is kind of a soft way of saying you will. But it's not a shall. It's close.
It's the old discussion of shall versus may.
Yeah.
Which we've had many times over the past years. I think there's a place at times for more restrictive or prescriptive language. There are those that say that has no place in the comp plan element.
I thought the goals were supposed to be the soft, and the policies were supposed to describe how you are going to achieve the goal. And so this doesn't do that in any way, shape, or form.
This document or this particular language?
Every goal with the policies underneath that policy does not tell me how it's developing North Kelsey area into a vibrant mixed-use development.
So that comes into the action steps. Too.
Yeah, so...
It's like... provide incentives for mixed-use buildings would be an action, which would be an action to address the policy of creating vibrancy, which is a
that's
policy
just,
for
just another goal if
developing
you're
North Tulsa.
And Bridget, I agree with you. I think that if we have a goal, we should have there's a place for strong language in this document.
It doesn't even have to be strong. It just has to give some description of what are we doing or what way are we taking action to move towards that goal.
Makes a lot
and
of
I'm
sense.
Sorry, I'm an English nerd, and it bothers me when words don't do what we say they're supposed to be doing.
Well, I would certainly agree.
Which is why I sat quietly for a while until you called me out, and now I'm out.
I'm glad you were very much for that.
I don't like any of it.
If you don't like it, say so. I'm glad you are. I appreciate it.
So is this what we're doing? Is this policy or is this just goals?
No, the goal is first and then the policies to achieve those goals come after.
Okay.
However, the policies are merely just some more goals towards our goals.
But do we have a clear vision of what the goal is for the city?
Well, it's stated.
I know we say this in words, but when you drive around the city of Monroe, does the city look like what the comprehensive plan envisioned at all?
Some
in parts.
In parts.
Parks have done quite well as far as being fulfilled.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Some of the roads have actually been fulfilled that were envisioned in the comprehensive plan elements in the past years. We wouldn't have Turning Place if it weren't probably for the comprehensive plan, because that was initially set forth in the planning documents. East-West Connector, other things like that. Yeah, there have been things that have come out as a result of this process.
One thing it is not, though, is a small town. And it says so right there.
Well, you know, very briefly, goals intend to be very broad brush. It's the dream. Develop North Kelsey as the greatest mixed-use development in Washington. Well, that's pretty wide open, but intentionally. But then the policies tend to
lead us
start to picking ways to work toward that. Like, in, well, a variety of commercial uses. Actually, 3.2 and 3.3 are kind of saying the same thing. It's a little redundant.
Can I throw this out as an idea, Bridget, just to see what your reaction would be? LUP 3.1, if it said approve new development that meets the goals, objectives, and design guidelines specified in the North Kelsey Development Plan, would that be a policy that would go toward that goal?
Yes, because approve is an action.
Then I would like to see that language.
But what about the North Kelsey Development Plan? Where is that? I don't know what I'm saying I want to approve towards.
Certainly.
It's not the old North Kelsey plan.
It's not.
Okay.
No, it's the what's left of the North Kelsey Development Plan is basically the architectural guidelines, not so much the development guidelines.
Yes, and those kinds of things make more sense. It's like when you have a paragraph, you have a thesis statement, and then all of your sentences under that are supposed to support and give proof for your thesis statement. And that's what this is supposed to be, too. Yet it's kind of all over the place.
Then I'd like to suggest that change there.
I'm at a disadvantage because I do not have a document.
I can share it.
I have the land use element in front of me that is in the comprehensive plan.
It's on the computer.
I can't bring that up. Okay.
Yeah, mine took like 10 minutes to open.
So that would be a suggestion that we have then for that section. At the bottom of that page, I thought that the policy being offered by on LUP 4.2, promote implementation of West Main Street corridor for new higher density residential and mixed uses. It felt weak to me. I thought that, it's probably a prime example of wishy-washy sort of language that some of you said you want to see go away. And if there's something that we can do to improve on that, it's one that comes to mind as I read through this. On the next page under agricultural preservation, theoretically the city's not going to have agricultural lands of significant long-term commercial value in it, are we?
No, it goes against the Growth Management Act in the growth area.
So would it not make more sense in LUG 5 for us to say support the preservation of agricultural lands of significance, et cetera, et cetera? Which would not limit us to stuff within the city. And it would say, yeah, we'll go along with the county on your ag preservation plan.
Yeah, then it goes on to say in areas outside of the urban growth area.
Right. Because we can't do it ourselves. We have no control. So we would only be acting in a supporting manner. The bottom of that page, LUP 6.2 didn't make any sense to me. Inform housing densities by the natural landscape. I think we just need to wordsmith that. I'm not sure what the intent is there. And then LUP 6.2.1 on the next page. Locate multifamily dwelling complexes and mobile home parks where access to roadways can be provided by mitigating congestion and disruption of established single-family residential neighborhoods. Again, it's a policy. I'm not sure what that's saying. On page 36, 6.8, LUP 6.8, I don't think that we can preclude someone putting a manufactured home on a legal lot anywhere, can we, Paul?
No, they're allowed in residential zones.
And we're saying we can only allow them through PRDs?
Well, as a development, mobile home parks are restricted as to where they can be done.
But we're not talking about a mobile home park here.
Manufactured home developments. We're talking about mobile home parks.
Well, 16. I mean, Bob Bacon put four or five manufactured homes on a short plat he did up on Chain Link Road. That's not a park. They're individual, legal, fee simple lots. It is a short plat, and he just did it all with manufactured homes. Yeah. Is that contrary to what we're saying here?
Technically, no, because he did. Those are lots that could have been sold for stick-built.
Yeah, they're single-family lots.
Could be manufactured homes, mobile homes.
But he didn't do it through the PRD process.
No. As a subdivision. Yeah, that was a subdivision of a short plan.
Right. So I just question whether we can, if that language is legally too restrictive. Now, if we were talking about the mobile home park, which we don't allow, as I recall.
It already says that in the zoning ordinance.
So maybe some of that language is unnecessary and unconstructive and inconsequential and should be there.
Could it just be removed?
Maybe it should just be deleted.
Delete? Yeah,
that's what Bill just said.
Yeah.
Can you remove it? LUP 7.4 at the top, page 37.
That's what I look for earlier when we're talking about the currency.
What is a reasonable time period?
Require services within a newly annexed area within a reasonable time period. So, what the heck does that mean?
Fluffy.
Well, so we annex 30 acres up on the hill, and someone wants to take 500 acres that they own there and build a house on it. They want to do it on septic because sewer's 600 feet away. Is that contrary to what we're saying here?
It's done if it's done within a reasonable period of time.
I think what we're really talking about here
is concurrency, if anything. And it goes back to that, is it concurrency or is it adequate public services?
Well, I'm not sure that either one of those relate to annexation, do they?
They do in terms of development of that annexed area.
But that doesn't, the development that's going to occur in that annexation has nothing to do with the annexation itself.
No. Well, the annexation, the annexation should be based on some reasonable feasibility that services can be provided. Otherwise, why are we annexing?
Different situation of being the belief that the services can be provided if wanted versus being required that they be provided to the area. Mm-hmm. Different situation.
And the other question, the basic question of who's going to provide those services?
Yeah. I mean, certainly we're not.
The city not going to proactively go out and start laying in infrastructure. That's developer driven.
So, and maybe this is one of those things that again gets the delete.
This is a real open-ended. That was why I redlined. What's reasonable?
I don't think you can put a time frame on it.
I didn't take time to think about it. Of course, the next one is one of those examples of things that have been addressed. Council did approve extending that final reading a couple weeks ago,
right?
Last month.
So the last question I had in here, questions related to the section on the airport, first airfield. So we're proposing to take the maps out.
Oh, the overlay?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think I kind of like, actually this is not new language here, but the language about the policy OU 11.6, I guess, just incorporating the federal regulation part 77. What's the status on the airport overlay zone at this point, Paul, and the ordinance? Is it still, it's still there, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. We had to do a notification to all of the property owners in the overlay zone March of last year, every 5 years. So it's still in place, intact, has not changed. As part of our long-range redo of the zoning ordinance, there's a lot of confusing language in that section that needs to be cleaned up. But it is still intact.
And isn't going to go away?
No, I wouldn't think so.
Should it be in some way, should there be some reference made to that? I mean, the map made that reference because of the zoning overlay. When you take the map out of here, then there's no discussion whatsoever about the city having that zoning.
Well, I think there's a place for this maybe in the body of the text, as but these maps do not belong in policies.
Okay, so the maps are going to be replaced then with some text that would address that issue as a basis for the ordinance and its existence.
Yeah, and I think there could be some discussion of zoning in the body of this text. It doesn't simply end with land use. There has to be a bridge to zoning. So there's some things that probably done in the next 3 days. But this is the first time here, this is definitely the wrong place for these maps.
All right. But some language that points toward that.
Right.
Or there's a basis for that is the right place here.
Yeah.
Okay.
And probably within that there's a section, I think, about first error in the narrative where some of this could come into play.
Right. Okay. Good. That's all I have. Thank you.
Paul, there was a couple places in here that use the word inform. But it doesn't, to me, when you're informing somebody, you're saying inform.
That's more of a design term that probably works well with design people. Meaning that the existing conditions help define the physical configuration of whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the planning design vocabulary.
Right. But what are you really trying to say with him?
I'm trying to say that what you build should reflect the conditions, the topography, the orientation, the layout of the land. I mean, you don't cut down the mountain to build a project on a piece of flat ground. Sure. Work with the mountain. Let the mountain speak to you or help guide what that development's going to, how it's going to come together. Some kind of a high level. Really the idea being don't destroy what led you to purchase this ground in the first place to live on or to develop.
Okay.
Don't take the mountain down here.
So was that the intent of that word on page 34?
Inform. Yeah.
Inform housing density by natural landscape and its features.
Think about what you're doing before you totally destroy it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll work on that.
Right. I have a better understanding of that.
I think there could be a better word.
Yeah.
Or two. That's the last part of the time.
Anything else? You sure? Paul, are you looking for anything more on this section tonight?
I don't think so. I'm going to try and get through this whole thing. And one thing we're going to be doing, too, is updating these tables and so forth. And some of these tables, I think, may be pulled and gone somewhere else, like... there's some pretty detailed housing information here, I think. That really belongs in the housing chapter, for example. But yeah, there's a lot of painting to be done through those first 25 pages. Give my best shot.
Commissioner Demers?
Well, in light of some of the discussion, can you maybe bring something back to us, too, that somewhat briefly talks about the role of policies and goals, or goals and policies in the comp plan document?
Yeah.
Sure. I think it would be helpful for you to see some guidance again on that, maybe others, too.
And actually, I'm more used to goals, objectives, and policies.
Yeah,
it's three layers.
See,
now it's expanding.
Yeah, I agree.
These policies are kind of like a hybrid.
Policy in there anyway.
No, a policy is a procedure and reflects an action. It's, this is our policy to do this or not do that.
Yeah.
So maybe the problem is with that word.
Yeah, I never understood the use of policy.
To me, a policy is something that defines the direction. It doesn't necessarily get specific. You know, use yellow paint to stripe the highway. It's more like stripe the highway.
Yeah.
But it's still saying stripe the highway. It's not saying consider making the highway safe with markers.
There you go. It's perfect.
I mean, yeah, it is for that.
Well, when you develop a plan, you have a goal, and then under that goal, you say, look, I'm going to build a building. And how are you going to build it? You have to have some concrete development things that you can do to deal with that.
Well, I think your goal
might be... You can't say, well, encourage, you know, using building materials.
Yeah, exactly.
Your goal might be to
promote good work habits.
Yeah, consider trees.
Yeah. Consider adding, you know, facilities.
Okay, I considered it, and I don't know what to do.
Your goal might be to build some kind of building.
Yeah.
You know, to do X,
right.
And then your policy might be to use.
Ice.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Use energy efficient HVAC systems.
Right.
And then the action might be much more specific than
right.
That.
Sure. But that would be an objective, like you said.
Yeah.
But
that
would be
kind of
an
ascending order.
Now, how you say that?
In the goal, you don't say you want it to be made of masonry and blue windows.
And also, and there's one part in there about something reflecting the character of Monroe. I would like to.
I did dump the small town atmosphere.
Yeah, I think we did that a while ago, didn't we?
In fact, we took that out of the North Kelsey development.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a small town.
It says something about reflecting Monroe's character.
Well, that goes back to Diane's comment earlier. We were talking about vision. And we talked about vision in recent meetings, and that the comprehensive plan really doesn't have a good vision to it. And the Duval was provided as an example. Because you're absolutely right, it is weak in that area.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many different areas that you can't really say Monroe has one character, but different areas of Monroe have different characters.
But that could be encapsulated perhaps into the vision document.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do we see Monroe as looking like 5, 10, 20 years down the road?
Mm-hmm.
What do we as a community want it to be like? We don't have...
Okay.
Now, granted, it's going to add a few pages, perhaps.
Well, I mean, if we want a Bavarian village...
Well, maybe just a little more clarity.
Do they make it
clear? No, it's not what I'm saying.
See, when I read this over, I'm going, is this our goals? If this is our goals, it's so general, how do you get any goals out of this?
If you miss one element out of seven, two.
Okay, that's true. I'm dealing with the one I have right in front of me right now, because I haven't been introduced to the other ones. I keep looking at my book and going, you know, you really should start reading that. This can't do it. It's just so big. But I'm trying to figure this all out, and what I've read so far really didn't give me, as a general public, if I was coming to look at this, I don't know that I have a lot of direction of what I would do in a when I wanted to do my business, if I wanted to build a business. So that's what I was asking. Is this just goals or is this actual policy due? So I'm just trying to figure it out.
I'll see if I can come up with some helpful information. But then this land use element, this first chapter, well, I think that establishing some kind of very short vision summary will set the stage for this, but this is what really sets the direction for the entire rest of the book.
You're right.
Everything else is derived from this. This is the foundation. So this is really the most important one. If you had to single one out.
But then, like Bridget said, there should be a little less wordy and a little more direction than I would think if this is actual our basis of what we build the city.
But maybe it's not really policy and we're just using the wrong word. There's always that too.
That's
yeah.
It's plain, you know. It's not supposed to make sense all the time.
Well, I think it's fair to say, Diane, that you said you came to the city and wanted to try to figure out what you could do. You wouldn't necessarily look at this document as much as you would look at zoning codes.
Well, that's true.
This document is the basis for future decision making.
Okay.
And how that decision making may affect those zoning codes and those development regulations.
Sure.
Paul, is that fair?
Yeah, it's fair, Stephen.
Okay.
Yeah. This really is, well, this sets the direction for the zoning.
For the zoning, okay. Mm-hmm.
And subdivision and all of that.
And future decisions by the council.
Mm-hmm.
And us.
Mm-hmm. Recommendations.
Recommendations.
Right. Recommendations. Okay.
Not necessarily the way it's going to be.
Issues, anything else?
On that or
on that?
Discussion?
On that? Okay. Let's see, where are we at? Discussion by commissioners and staff. Paul, you want
to? Yeah, a couple things. We are meeting a week from tonight, land use again, and we'll be bringing housing in June. I don't think it's going to be a meeting on June 10th. I think that's the second Monday. I'm actually taking the first 2 weeks of June for vacation. I've postponed it 3 times. And actually, Melissa's headed for Spain on Sunday and other places for several days. So I don't think there's going to be a commission meeting the first for the first meeting in June. But we'll be coming back with, like I explained earlier, housing and so forth. Council tomorrow night is going to talk about the natural environment element. So we'll bring you up to speed on what their take was. And we did talk about doing the buildable lands. I'll call it an infomercial at an upcoming meeting here pretty soon. Now, on the RFP, like I say the proposals are due on the 23rd, and Kirk Garian has offered to sit on the selection committee from council. Mm-hmm. And let's see, refresh my memory. Who's going to come from the commission?
Bill.
Is that Bill?
Was it Bill?
Oh, okay. For the selection committee?
I think it was.
Did we have someone volunteer?
You voted on it? Was I even here?
You got nominated.
No. Actually, we should decide that tonight. But we're looking for a planning commissioner, a park and recreation commissioner. You might qualify for that.
I'm on both sides.
Right. You can't do both. You can do one or the other. Council, commission, and staff. Any interest on someone here? June 20th is the anticipated scheduled date for interviews. Like about a half a day.
I would do it.
It'd be...
I second your motion.
When do you have a Parks and Recreation meeting?
It's this Thursday.
Okay.
Maybe Thursday. I can't be there.
Okay. I'll talk to
you. I have a goal. and the number of policies we have.
It's about time for some action, isn't it? I'll talk to Mike about it, some of the commission. Council tomorrow is also discussing, this came up rather suddenly, potential expansion of the UGA to the southwest. Dave Remlinger was in last week, and he had been in several months ago about potentially developing the, I guess the Nordstrom farm southwest of high school down toward the river, with some thought about going to the county about potentially expanding the UGA in that direction. And there's some pickups with the county UGA site, which I still don't fully understand.
Is that east of 522?
Yeah. Both sides.
Both sides. Okay.
Both sides.
He's only the east. He's on the one side. Only east.
He's on the west side.
The upstream side. He's on the east side.
On the east side.
East side.
Yes, east side.
And would he be talking about just the upland portions of that property?
Yes.
We can't annex.
Not the entire property. More the eastern and northern portions of it.
Outside of it.
That's coming up some general discussion. Not sure if that's going to go anywhere or not. That's what it is.
Okay. So you have that down, that Bridget volunteer.
I'll need a reminder.
That's fine.
I just want to make sure that that's
that we got it.
Clear.
I was going with you.
So yeah, we'll, on the record.
We'll work on it. Anything else, Paul?
No.
Commissioner Tuttle?
No, thank you.
Commissioner Bellin? Commissioner Dirksen? Commissioner Sherwood?
Yeah, I just need a little guidance. This Stanton Meadows letter I received is envelope and my envelope was opened up probably because they learned Jeff Sherwood does not live here. But anyways, they're asking us for input concerning improvements that they would pay for to make their neighborhood safer. Apparently they're just looking for permission. This is really not our capacity.
I
gave it
to Paul to take this staff.
I wonder if they sent this to council members also.
They did. They indicated the letter that they did.
Well, that's going to be passed on to Public Works.
Okay, so we can pretty much set that aside.
Don't really have any role in that.
Directing.
Unless you want to.
You have to
ask my commissioner.
No. Commissioner. Paul, any news on our vacancy?
Pardon me?
Our vacancy, any news on that?
We did have an interview, was it last week? With Steve Jensen.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And seemed to be a pretty favorable reaction.
Good.
Yeah, I haven't talked to him ever since.
Okay.
So we may have another person. And you're going to be, you're here until the end of the year?
Me?
Yes.
Maybe. Presumably.
Or sooner. But I think that's the end of your term.
Yes, I am. And lawyer term is out. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that would be determined.
Yeah, it's been long determined. Only question I had, though, was on, Paul, what happened with the revisit or reconsideration of the 45-foot sign pit out here by council?
They voted, they talked about it last week on their first reading and put it back to 45. And it's coming up tomorrow night for a second reading. But we did add some language in the table. It mistakenly assumed or thought that the 45% would be limited to the 522 frontage.
Adjacent
to 522. But when you really looked at it, Technically, I could have come in with an application to put a 45-foot site on Main Street on the east end of the dealership. So we've added a few words to restrict it to one per property, and it has to be on 522. But it did go back to 45. I think it was... I think there was one council member missing. 5-1. I think it was only one vote against.
Okay. All right, thank you, that's all.
I'm going to ask how to Walmart.
Yeah, there was a hearing on April 29th, and each side had 10 minutes to present the case. Zach Lellor, city attorney, had a statement prepared, and I don't think he got, I wasn't there, but apparently didn't get more than, you know, a few sentences into his statement when one judge, three judges, one started preparing, asking questions, and he never did read his statement. He used up the 10 minutes with questions and did basically the same thing with the other, the friend's attorney. But what it came down to with this discussion with the judge was two things, lighting and benches. Which to me doesn't make much sense. That's what they talked about, or what there was concerns about. But not much to do with the intent of the original lawsuit. That had to do with whether it followed North Tulsa guidelines, not just for benches.
Thank goodness Tony asked for all those extra benches at the last minute.
I know. I think lighting was addressed at one of the council meetings. It would be taken care of in the design approval process, but you know, the code requires lighting controls, you know, cutoffs and so forth. But it matches the lighting. Seems
so if you kind of look at that from around the corner, you might think that they're going ahead. They're probably going to go ahead
with this thing.
That's what. You know, from what you just said, right. From what I have heard from other people,
right. That's what
it sounded to me like, it's a done deal.
My reaction was, why do we bother to have this hearing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Had to discuss.
Well, why did?
So how about lighting? There we go. Okay, that's all I have. Anybody else? I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll move so.
I'll second.
Okay, moved by Commissioner Rodlin, seconded by Commissioner Demarest. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Good night.
Bye, Bridget.
The key is from the structure.